Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the hottest new show on the internet, where your host is an innovator, motivator, captivator, an inspirator, and an authoress. She comes raw and uncut. Sit back and relax. You're about to be unmasked by authoress Terry E. Lyle. Every Friday, right here, 7:30 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio.
You know, someone asked me recently, what do I do when I have some downtime? So I thought about this for a moment. And to my mind, I thought about a nice hot soothing bubble bath, candles, a nice glass of wine, with just the right book to read. And instantly I thought about authoress Terry E. Lyle, because I knew I was guaranteed to get a good laugh or some soul searching, just like a few of her other books, Insane, Peeling Back the Mask, and her latest, Exposed. This author has written 9 books, and I can't pick a favorite. But my advice to you is make your own choice by going to her personal website, where she even autographs the books for free at www.terrylyle.com, or go to Author House, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local retailer to get your copy and start your collection today. Because this is the last time I'm going to say that you can't borrow mine.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. This is authoress Tara E. Lyle and Shalonda for another episode of Unmasked. And I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in. And you could have been somewhere else, but you chose to hang out with me here on this Friday evening. And I want to thank everyone for their well wishes, because I just got out of the hospital yesterday, and I'm trying to do this by faith. You know, I'm feeling a little, I got some pills in me trying to stop the pain, but we're going to let the show continue. And tonight we have an exciting guest, Mrs. Dale Stanton. And this lady, oh, my Lord, she wrote a book called The Hooker's Daughter. She comes from Boston, but she lives in Arizona now. And she shares with us her child's journey, and she reveals how a Jewish family embroiled in prostitution, shoplifting, stolen cars, homelessness, homosexuality, and terminal illness. Now, you know, it's going to be some shocking memoirs that she's going to share. But before we start with that, I want to introduce my co-host, Shalonda, who has my back, and I know she's going to hold me up where I fall weak. How you doing, Shalonda?
I'm good. Happy Friday. How are you, Miss Terry? I know you're holding
hanging
on
in
there,
sis. And
yeah.
We want to welcome our special guest, and we're glad that she chose the time to, you know, be here with us and, you know, share her story, because the purpose of her story, we want people to understand, is that you can start somewhere, but you don't have to end where you start. And with that being said, hello, Dale. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to also hang out with you along with your listeners. So I was looking forward to this time with you.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So we're going to start back from the beginning, because this is rough. I mean, how old were you when you first was exposed to the fact that your mom was prostituting? And what was the reason? Was it economic, or was it just sometimes people just like sex, you know, and they just go there?
Right. I don't think that particularly was her motivation. She really wanted to fight the idea of poverty, and my father wasn't too enthusiastic about earning a living. He lived at home. I mean, he was in our lives, I should really put it that way, but I often will say, I mean, I don't know that he would have noticed whether I had shoes on or not, and as much as maybe a good soul he was, he just lacked in so many other ways. So my mother turned to it that as a means to keep us going. Her own life, her own childhood, she had been raised in kind of dire circumstances, and she was poor, and I think that she was fearful of the experience repeating itself. So I think primarily that was her motivation. And furthermore, she fit a very good mold. She was very beautiful, and she was a charismatic personality in general, and people really flocked to her energy and her spirit. So I think the combination of all those factors really played into her life choice.
Well, you know something, Dale, I'm glad you said that, because when people think of prostitution, they think of people just having sex because the aim is to get high, you know, and just, you know, walk in the streets and everything. But quite as a step, people don't realize if you're a mother and a loving mother, you know, you will do anything to make sure your child have. Now, some people, you know, they might go on a date with somebody and they might not eat all their dinner because they want to bring back a doggy bag so they can share with their child. And, you know, they're not literally prostituting, but they do whatever they can to feed their child. So more kudos to your mom, because you got to do what you got to do. A mama that's loving her baby, she's going to do whatever it takes, whether you call it prostitution, whether you call it being thrifty, whether you call it working miserable jobs. You got to do what you got to do to take care of your family. So I'm not going to be down on her doing that, because you do what you got to do to survive, and that's what it's about. This world is about survival. Sometimes other people have better choices and, you know, alternatives to go to, but she did what she had to do. Now, you are one of how many siblings?
There's two of us, my sister and myself, and my sister was 6.5 years older than I am. And you asked at the beginning the question, how did I know or when did I know? I believe I like to pinpoint the time of awareness for me. was around 6 years old. I mean, I don't know that I could articulate it quite in the fashion as an adult, but I certainly understood it. And Johns would come to the house, as well as my mother's operation wasn't just out of the apartment, but it was in various other locations in and around Boston and the environs of beyond the community, the initial community.
Wow, wow. And so your dad, he was in the house, and he knew what your mom was doing, and he was cool with that. He didn't say nothing. He didn't get offended?
No, that's on the contrary. He was not cool with it, and I think that he lived a great deal of his life in denial, and he would come out of that denial every so often to talk about all he heard stories or people said things to him, and he would then become angry, and they would fight, and he might leave for 2-3 days, and then they'd get back together again, and it was the dance that they did, but primarily it was always, he always played the role that he didn't know, and she certainly didn't propagate that he should know, and so she was always lying to him, but it was an open secret, but of course not spoken about with him unless he came forth to be upset. And that happened every so often over the years. But most of the time it was a denial position.
Okay, well, I have another question, and then I'm going to let my co-host ask you a question. My next question is, did you ever have any problems when the Johns would come over, and by you being young and they're probably trying to come on to you? Because a lot of times when you hear stories, some people say a lot of guys, they want the youngest ones, pretty much they act like pedophiles, you know, where they don't want someone their own age. Did you ever have a problem with someone coming into your home and because they felt like they was paying for your mother's services that, they can touch you too or your sister?
No, I can unequivocally answer that no, I did not have a problem, which was the good news. And as I grew older, well into my teenage years, on occasion, not very many times, I could be standing at the bus stop planning to go on to school that day, and maybe somebody would stop the car and roll down his window and say, oh, you know, you're your mother's daughter. And, of course, I never would even address the thought in that person's head. So I escaped any signs that I was ever aware of any pedophile or mishandling or anything inappropriate for me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well,
yeah,
Simone,
that was
go
the
ahead
healthy
ask your question,
component.
Darling.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Dale. How are you?
Very good. Nice to speak to you as well. Thank you.
Nice to see. Okay. I have a question. Since you were young and you said your sister was 6 years older, did either one of you rebel against the issue of your mother being a hooker? Or how did it feel as a child knowing that even though you didn't understand the whole of being a hooker, but you knew the little things that, you know, that you would see with a hooker, how did you react as a child or your sister react? Did either one of you react negatively about it? Because I know a whole lot of children don't look at it from the standpoint of, oh, my mother's doing what she has to do to take care of us type of attitude.
Well, that's quite correct. I don't think at that point as a youngster that I was quite able to think it in the more positive way, even though it's a difficult thing to even be positive about. But I did rebel, and I would try to control my mother and, well, I don't know if I want to use the word beg, but chastise her or try to shock her and, oh, you know, I don't want you to be doing this. And as a youngster, of course, the words fell on her deaf ears as far as she was concerned. So I had no leverage, but I did. I understood that it was antisocial, and I wanted in my head to have a family that felt normal and did normal things, and I realized that this was a very dysfunctional kind of environment. And with regard to my sister, I mean, of course, my sister knew, and I can't really say how much outburst she might have had or try to control, as maybe I can only speak for myself on that. I don't really remember ever maybe hearing it or being a participant, but she rebelled in other ways and different other kind of behavior than I did. So I absolutely, if it sums up your for your question, I absolutely did try to think that I could make my mother conform to what I thought was normal in society's acceptance.
Wow. Well, listeners, if you're out there and you want to talk to Dale, you need to call in at 347-945-6003 because she has a story that she's willing to share. It's going to shock some people, and it's going to be like the norm to others because we all got a different walk in life. But we're going to take a small break, and we're going to be back in two and two. Stay with us. I would use that song because our guest, Dale Stanton, she had a trying journey from childhood to womanhood. Now, I have a question. When your mother was having the Johns coming in out the house and everything, and you said that y'all was poor, did you ever visualize sometime in the privacy of your room, like, well, maybe if I dress up and put on lipstick, maybe I can make some money too, because you was exposed to that, so it had to become your norm. So how did you process that?
I processed it very strictly because I somehow or another had a very, I was either blessed with very good DNA or some kind of internal structure that said, this life isn't for me and I don't want it. And I knew as a youngster that was part of it, that I needed to stay strong and keep myself on the right, what I considered the right track, and quote, quote, whatever normal is for people, I knew that this was not any way, fashion, or anything that I wanted to be a part of. So I was very strict with myself throughout my growing up.
Okay, well, you know, you also said that you was into your family, or you was into shoplifting, stolen cars, homelessness, and homosexuality. Tell us about the shoplifting.
Well, that was another means, because with it all, my mother didn't have unlimited money. I mean, whatever she earned, however far it took her, and she wasn't a person that was, I would say, a consumer, like we think of consumerism. She did want to have nice things, but she had a way where she could spend her money, like pay for the rent and food and things like that. So I would say that things like clothing, whatever she could get away with, she did. And she was very much into shoplifting, and I would be there many a time, and I'd serve as a prop, if you will, maybe, you know, be with her. Yeah, a cover. And it was also a very frightening experience. And, again, knowing that goes along with sort of being strict, it wasn't anything I wanted to do. And even though I was exposed to it on a pretty regular basis whenever I might be out with her or she might be out shopping, it was certainly very traumatic.
Yeah, well, you know, you was exposed, like you said, to prostitution, shoplifting. Your mom had to do certain things, and also homelessness, stolen cars, and homosexuality. Tell me, what was the thing that you was focused on so that you escaped all those things while you was in the thick of it? What was you using? What was the thing that kept you grounded? Was there a neighbor or another relative that helped you stay focused?
Actually, no. And I'm very often, I go out on presentations, and my presentation for the most part is called Rising Above Circumstances, and it's about overcoming dire circumstances, and that's one of the questions I'm often asked by the audience thereafter the talk. And it goes along with what I just said previously about knowing that there was nobody there really to mentor me. And it wasn't like maybe in today's society where maybe social workers would have been called or came in or been removed the children from the home because of the antisocial goings on. So I, again, knew I was like an adult, a child adult that knew that I was in this on my own and had to take care of myself. And it's bizarre, and I don't want to use the word bizarre. It wasn't bizarre, but it was a very matured decision for a very, very young child that I made.
You had an old soul, my.
Yes. An old soul. Thank you. That's a good way to put it. I did have an old soul.
Yeah, and I see Shalonda, she's sitting over there with her hand in the air. She got another question. But you go ahead,
right.
Shalonda, you ask your question. I'm going to come back with my questions. But I want to remind my listeners that y'all call in at 347-945-6003 and hit the 1 key. Let's know you got a question. So wherever you are, this is your opportunity to get in deep with Dale Stanton. So go ahead, Shalonda.
Okay. I know that you grew up in a Jewish home.
That's right.
Ms. Dale, okay. And how did the Jewish family, because I usually know that I grew up in a Jewish area in Baltimore in my younger years, and I know that the Jewish families were really close in what we would say in each other's business a lot.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
How was the reaction in your family? Did anybody know?
Was
it still like a secret within the family? Was she like ostracized and fussed at because of it? Or what was the reaction in the family?
Okay, well, first of all, even to this day, and sometimes when I'm out speaking to Jewish-oriented groups, they find it shocking because Jewish people don't think that kind of thing goes on. They ascribe to a higher power. And I say this as a sort of jokingly. Jews years ago would say that they don't even drink. I mean, you know, of course we know that that's not true. Life is filled. People have all kinds of issues and things. But I did live in a very ghetto-like environment. a very, it was first and second generation immigrant families who were ascribing to the American way of life. Yiddish was spoken on the streets and in the homes, and there were certainly a lot of landmarks for Jewish life there. And everybody in the community, I'm sure, knew. I think it was the best kept open secret. And again, we were ostracized, and my own experience was that children were taken away from me, that they couldn't play with me. Not all. I mean, there were some parents that were more tolerant and not feeling that I would sabotage their children's moral compass. And on the other hand, I do write in the story, and there were many, many instances, but I was probably 10 years old, and I was asked to leave the Girl Scouts because I might be a bad influence on the kids. So you can see the discrimination.
Well, Bill, we got a listener on the line, and they have a question for you. But I just, before I get this listener on, I just want to say I used to have a Jewish girlfriend going to school, and I didn't learn too much from her except two things. She was very thrifty and frugal, and the phrase that oy vey me, like basically, oh, my goodness. And that's what I got to say about your story. But caller with the last digits, 1625, are you there?
Yes, my name is Tony, caller from Baltimore.
How are you doing, Tony? Yeah. You can talk to
my...
Yes, fine, dear.
How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing fine, darling. So let us know what you want to ask Dale or put your question out there.
Okay, Dale, I know that moms will do what they need to do for their children, and I know that. And I don't have any recollection. My family, well, my mom did anything, but I don't know. But
right.
I know a mom would do what they have to do. My question for you: how did it affect you? What your mama did, and how it affect your life, and how your life is now. In the process of that.
Well, thank you, first of all, Tony, for listening to the program and for calling in and with a question. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to answer it. Well, I was filled and mortified with a lot of shame, and it's a burden to carry that kind of shame, and I'll throw in the word there, guilt. Because one thinks they're responsible, especially a child when you grow up in an environment like that, they feel guilty for what's going on and what goes awry. So it was a burden on me throughout most of my life, and the gossip was terribly debilitating. And again, when I suffered rejection and various other instances that highlighted it could be very sad for me. And so it had a bearing on the journey that I took. I mean, I didn't have the tools. I certainly had a certain mental strength, but in a certain way, I didn't have the tools, emotional tools, let's say, to run away. And maybe that was just as good that I didn't do that. And I sort of lived through it, if that kind of answers it. But it wasn't something you could just go say, oh, ho-hum, that's the way it was.
Right.
Of course I paid a penalty for it.
I know that. But how is your life now? How is your life persisting now?
My life I'm very grateful for. I've learned a lot of lessons, and my life, fortunately, is wonderful. I learned to cast out my mother's negative influence. But I also absorbed her brow-beating lessons. And in the end, now of my life, I realized that through the trials and tribulations that I went through, she gave me a gritty strength to fight my way through trouble and hardship. And I can honestly say I loved and I hated her for who she was and for what she had done to and for our family. But on the other hand, I got through it, and it was not easy, the ups and downs.
Well, let me ask you a question, Dale. You know, me per se, when I was young, I'm very curious. I want to know everything. I'm signifying. So at any given time, when your mother was having a John, you didn't want to go, like, pee-pee through the door and crack and this, you know, because you're a child, you're curious. Did the sounds coming out the room, did anything make you want to go look and be nosy?
Oh, absolutely. And a few times over the course of time, I mean, it wasn't certainly a frequent activity on my part, but I would try the shock value of, Ma, stop it, what are you doing? Or maybe open the door on her. But that was to try to control and, again, being a child, thinking that I had that kind of power, but I didn't have any power.
Yes, she probably felt like saying, shut up, I'm trying to get paid. What you doing? Get out of here, you know? I have another question. Okay, you said, we're talking about you grew up around homosexuality. Explain that part of your life.
Okay, well, that was the next big blow, apart from all that was going on. And let me add here, I don't know if you gleaned it from when you went to my website. Besides the Johns, my mother had a life of, there was always a boyfriend in her life as part of her recreational idea of when she wasn't working, so we were used to that kind of thing. But so there was so much going on to sort through. However, I was 9 years old, and I mentioned my sister was 6.5 years older than me. So at age 16, she came out as a lesbian. Well, my sister at that point, up until that point, I should say, had been my mentor, my savior, my caretaker, whatever. I depended and leaned on her, and suddenly this person was coming out as defective. And what was that? And now I really want to add, that was in the 1950s. And coming out as a lesbian, a gay person, was absolutely a radioactive subject. I mean, it just was not the thing that happened. So with that, my sister ran away from home, and my mother actually was fraught with guilt and heartbroken, because with it all, despite what my mother's behavior was, in many ways she didn't understand the non-conventional kind of lifestyle that my sister was doing. And my sister's persona became very masculine. She, and I don't know if you know the term from those days, they would call that severe haircut a DA, which meant duck's ass, and she wore bomber jackets, and she was big and no makeup. And so it was, like, horrifying. Well, she ran away from home, and my mother got the police, and they found her, and then they put her in initially in a convent for until she had to go to court. Now, we mentioned Jewish. I mean, you think about it, a Jewish girl in a convent, I mean, it doesn't fly. And then the court deemed her to go to a mental institute for observation. And I will add this to it. She definitely was not crazy. It was just the times, and they didn't know what to do. So after all that, she came home for a very little bit, but then she ran away, and basically she was homeless for quite a while, living off the streets and struggling with what her journey was going to be. So that's where the homosexuality, and again, so confusing, and I will add at this point of the conversation, not only as a 9-year-old, but she was an important person in my life as me being the younger sister. I was totally devastated and heartbroken to think that my sister now was defective and no longer in my life.
I kind of believe that, you know, when you said your sister came out as a masculine lesbian because they got what they call today now butch, which is very masculine, and femme, which is very ladylike, because since your dad act like he was oblivious to what was going on, and she might have felt like she's older than you and she's rebelling about what your mother doing, being a prostitute, and so she might have got turned off and thinking that men were useless because dad wasn't stepping up. Your mother had to, you know, do what she had to do to get paid. So I guess she probably felt like, okay, I'm going to come out, I'm going to be with another woman, you know, I'm going to be strong, I'm going to take care of the family. Maybe it's how she escaped what y'all was going through because, and like you said, the time frame, you know, the 50s and stuff, they weren't ready for homosexuality to be as exposed as it is today. And even today, In some cases, you know, they don't think that homosexuality should be thrown in people's spaces. It should be still something that's secretive behind closed doors, but everywhere you look, pal is in your face. You know, it is what it is. So maybe that was the way she was handling it, you know, because she didn't have, like you said, that character that you have, you know, just to, like, stay grounded. You know, but it's hard to say when a person was involved in all of these.
It is hard to say, and as time has progressed, and at first, you know, as shocking as it is, and you contemplate, is it nature or nurture kind of discussion, but I do believe, just from my own point of view, it might not be yours or your listeners, that I think that as time has marched on and we've seen so much of gay people out there, that I believe that you're born with that, and despite the environment, because I've seen very, let's say, stable environments still that gay, homosexual people come out of. So I don't think that the blame can be, I mean, you know, she probably was a very angry, upset person apart from what she chose to do. But it was the closeted 50s, and it's not like today where there are gay pride parades and marriages and children within the thing. It just was not that kind of a life then.
Well, I heard you say you think that people are born gay. Personally, I think people are born babies, and I think they're acclimated to a certain environment or exposed to certain things, and they choose to be gay.
Jeez.
But that's just me. Now, Shalonda, what's your thoughts on that?
I actually believe the same thing. You know, I used to be an early childhood educator, so we studied nature versus nurture a lot. And I honestly believe that people are not born gay. This is a learned behavior, and it's not necessarily learned because your parents are gay, but if you migrate more towards your mother and you're a male, you take on those female tendencies. The same way with a female who migrates towards her father more and maybe admire the things that he do, has a tendency to be more dominant, or they migrate towards not necessarily the mother or father, but the mother and father figure in their mind. That's what I believe, too. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. You know, I respect people's opinions, and I hope people respect mine, that I really believe that it is not nature to be born gay. It's nurtured into them after birth.
Well, we see that we got another caller on the phone here. We got a lady by the name of Gail. She has a question for our guest, and Gail...
What is her name, Dale or Gail?
Yes, her name
Gail.
Is Gail. She got
okay.
Good evening, everybody. I just want to piggyback on what you and Shalonda have said as far as people being born gay, but not that much because they already said everything that I would have said as well. But I really didn't get the beginning of what was going on with who was the person who was gay?
My sister.
Your sister?
Yep.
And you said she was, what, it was some type of trauma or something that had made her become that way, or what was going on? Why was she?
That was her rebellion. They think that it was part of the rebelling because her mother was a hooker.
Oh, okay, so it was trauma. Yeah, because some people go through changes that will, you know, actually make them choose that path, you know, because they, you know, either fed up or something they don't like about somebody, you know, because I had a girlfriend once who was raped by her biological father, and she, even though she had three children and everything, but she was being raped by her biological father when she was in her teen years. And so now she's got to the point where she doesn't like men, and she's a lesbian, you know. So different things can cause a person to gravitate that in that particular way. Because my daughter is gay, and she had told me that she believed she was born gay. I said, "No, darling, you were not born gay. You was born my beautiful baby daughter." You know, now she felt that she was gay because she said she had those feelings of wanting, because she had told one of her her school teachers when she was in elementary school that she had loved her, and, you know, she was looking at her as wanting her to be a girlfriend. But I said, no, that still does not, you know, that's not a fact that you was born gay. Now, as far as her making a decision to go that way, or she had those tendencies in her to want to be gay, but definitely my daughter was not born gay. That's like calling God a liar when he, mm-hmm. you know, when he births someone, a boy or a girl, and then you turn around and say, I was born that way. No, God borns us in his image, and we are our gifts to our parents. So he would not, and then the fact of the matter, if he, you know, born somebody gay, that's like he's being a hypocrite, because he's is damnation for, you know, people of that nature. Now, God does not hate anyone. He loves us all, regardless if we're gay, straight, bi, black, white, or whatever. What it is, he hates the actions that we do. So, you know, people say, well, I know he loves me. Yes, he does. But,
okay,
you know, your actions are going to be... You know,
well, I would like to interject that I don't think that being gay for any person, and I'm not just relating to my sister having come out as gay, I mm-hmm. think that it is still God's love, and you said that children are born, a girl or a boy, and that's God's love. Well, I like to think that God loves everybody just as
right,
you
he
said.
Does.
And whatever their choices are, is their choices, and we know that it's not a perfect world, and everybody can't be in the same image. And
right, that's true.
And I think that, and I have no idea, Carla, what might have gone in on your life, and let's just presume that your environment was a marshmallow fluff kind of, everything was perfect, and there weren't issues. And I know many people that their children, for example, will talk about them, or even not children of them, but people who grew up in very loving, stable environments, and
mm-hmm.
somehow or another they chose to make that transition from what we view as a perfect heterosexual world. So I think that, again, I think that we have to look at what God chooses to give us, or whatever we are, we're all God's children, whatever our choices
no doubt.
Are.
No
well,
doubt.
Dale, we have another caller on the line again who want to ask you a question, and his ending number is 1625. Listener, are you still there?
Yes, this is Tony again from Baltimore.
Right.
Well, I'd like to ask you a question. I want to know, you know, although you, you know, your mother was in the prostitution and all that, and now that you, you know, at the status you are now, I want to know, how do you feel about men, and if you have a relationship, and what your thoughts is about men because of what you endured in your life with your mom, and your mom having to do what she had to do. Not saying anything bad about your mom, but mom's going to do what they have to do.
Exactly.
I want to know how you feel about men in
well,
general, and if that's any do you... you know, have a relationship, or do you like me?
Okay, well, thank you, caller, and thanks for the question and the previous caller. You're all asking, I think, wonderful things, so that's appreciated. I think, like everything else, life is not a clear path. I abhor and frown on people that adultery and maybe cheat on their husbands or their wives. It goes both ways, whether it be just for a sexual purpose or companionship. I feel like if you can't do the straight path. So I think that it taught me personally lessons that maybe, you know, in my heart, certainly I think one has to look at their trust issues, and I've had to deal with that. But on the other hand, I've been, again, I feel very fortunate, and in writing this book, I think I spell it out in there, that I have been able to have, I have a wonderful husband, and I so appreciate who he is, what he is, and what he stands for. I have children, and I really, I don't go around negative towards men. And on the other hand, I know what I need for me. I wouldn't like to think that I was with somebody that wasn't honest and forthright and those things that I personally demand in behavior. And my husband fits that role, and that's why I'm with him. On the other hand, I wouldn't tolerate somebody that wasn't that way. So I don't feel at all that I have a negative view of men. I think people do what they do, whether it's females or males. And all of us, as I've learned in life, none of us are perfect, and that's what we have to strive for. And I do biblical studying that we're not perfect, but it's God's command to try to make the world better. Does
that
give you a sense of my answer, Carla?
That really bring it home. Tony, did that help out what she was trying to say? To clear it up for you?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's okay. That's good.
And
so
now
I just wanted her to know that she don't have a bad outlook on men because of what went down. You know, because all men just not like that, but, you know.
Absolutely, Tony. I mean, the world is, as we know, Tony, is it? The world is full of all kinds of people, good, bad, evil, conniving, but good too. And so I think, you know, part of the maturation, the whole thing is you have to sort out whom you trust. A lot of it is trust issues and caring about people. So that's part of the journey. I don't think, you know, you can brand...
Can I ask a question?
You can trust,
yeah.
And he's there for you, and my hat's off to you, and I'm glad about your progress.
Well,
okay,
I thank you for your...
Amanda has a
question. For your well wishes.
For a small break. Go ahead, Shalonda.
Okay.
Okay, Ms. Dale. As you grew up, your father was in the home while your mother was still a hooker. How did you look at your father? Did he still seem like a strong male in the household, or was your mother that dominant figure? Because he allowed her to be a hooker, and he was more laid back and lazy about life. So what was your outlook on your father like?
Well, my outlook was anger, sadness, compassion. All those emotions mixed into it. The apathy was upsetting. I mean, as young as I was, but and anger is in there that, you know, he wasn't stepping up to the plate. And if we're at all, if we're talking at all, any Bible stuff, with it all, you love your mother and father, to honor your mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. And with it all, in my way, I loved him. Even though he disappointed me, and perhaps he disappointed himself too, and I'm sure he did. I think he was a very depressed person, and in today's society, maybe he would have been diagnosed clinically depressed. I'm not sure about that, but I would think so. So I think it's a configuration of a lot of mixed emotions of sadness and loss. There's a lot of loss there. The interaction of having an active parent who participates in your life.
Well, I just want to say this, like we're tiptoeing around. We keep saying a word, hooker. Hooker doesn't even roll off of my mouth good. You know, did you hear the terminology like your damn mother's a whore or she's a prostitute? Because let's keep it real. You know, not too many people use the word hooker because hooker sound like you're trying to clean it up. But, you know, regardless of what the reason is, you know, did you hear that a lot? Your mom's a whore. She's a prostitute. How did that make you feel to hear the graphic, dirty terms for the act that she was doing?
Are you asking me that question?
Yes, I am.
Okay. No, I think as much as I might have suffered a lot of rejection, people weren't as overt to say things like that to my face. What they might have said to each other or behind closed doors, I have no idea. So maybe only once I heard an outburst of that was pretty painful. But beyond that, never, because I think that, you know, again, people, it was gossip. It was fodder for gossip.
Absolutely. Well, Dale, we sure enjoy talking to you, and we got a whole lot of time left, and we got some more questions, but we have to take a break so I can get me some water because my throat is getting a little parched. But you stay with us. You want to call in? Call in at 347-945-6003. While we got Dale here sharing her life with us, we're going to talk some more and come back with some more questions. But hit the number one key. Let me know you got a question. We'll be back in 2 and 2.
Something my godson Elijah and little girl named Corinne. Say the black of the best, the sweet of the juice. I say the dark of the flesh, and the deep of the roots. I give a holler to my sisters on welfare. If I can, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. When you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. Forgive, but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need, and I ain't trying to catch up, I just call them how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? That when brothers make mates and leave a young mother to be a pet. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman, I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, lady, but keep your head up. Yo, I remember Marvin Gaye used to sing to me. He had me feeling like black was the thing to be. And suddenly the ghetto didn't seem so tough. And though we had it rough, we always had enough. I was the buff about my curfew and broke the rules. Run with the local crew and had a smoke or two. I realized mama really paid the price. She nearly gave her life to raise me right. And all I had to give her was my mic. Bring my how about the mic and make it to the mic. My buddy lost his whole family. It's gonna take the man in me to conquer this insanity. It seems the rain will never let up. I try to keep my head up and still keep from getting wetter. You know it's funny when it rains, it pours. They got money for wars but can't feed the poor. Said it ain't no hope for the youth, and the truth is it ain't no hope for the future. And then they wonder why we crazy. I blame my mother for turning my brother into a black baby. We ain't meant to survive cause it's a setup. Kids is driving big, but still trying to hold on.
Yes, and you got to keep your head up when you're going through something. But first I want to start off by giving a shout-out to all my friends from north to south, east to west, people listening all over the globe, and some of my special friends from Maryland, Halsey and Tony and Brevette Lynch and all of y'all up there. Thank you for supporting the sister, my buddy Gail on the line, and Jade and my mama and everybody in California hanging out with us, and Wayne Ditchville in Australia. Thank you for tuning in. But you know something? We're talking to Dale Stan, and she's talking about in the 50s that her mama was getting paid to have sex. And her sister was a, you know, a masculine lesbian, and they was caught up into homosexuality, stolen cars, prostitution, shoplifting, you know, and using words like hooker. But, you know, that's how they say it. But in my neighborhood, we don't call people hookers when they're getting paid for sex. We call them tramps. We call them whores. You know, it is what it is. I ain't trying to get, you know, caught up into the love don't change between you and your mom. But, you know, it is what it is. It's dirty. It's gritty. You know, your mama was a whore, and your sister, she was a dyke. You know, she up there trying to be all hardcore with the bomber jackets and everything, you know, loving on the women, you know. So we got to put it out there real, you know. I'm not trying to defame your family, but, you know, if somebody's going to grow, they got to have the truth in their face first. We can't make it seem like it's so nice, because ain't nothing nice about being a little prostitute, being a hooker, or being gay. It is what it is. Your mama had a purpose. She just wanted to take care of her kids because your daddy was a bum. He wasn't doing shit but laying around the house. And it is what it is, and it's a lot of dysfunctional stuff going on. So I'm not here to defend, you know, offend you, but, you know, we got to bring it real, because our listeners out there, they know what it is. You know, this is an adult show, and so we're coming at that way. And we got a caller still on the line. He got a question for you, Dale. So Dale got a question. I'm going to bring her in. And anybody else who want to get in on this conversation, dial 347-945-6003, hit the 1 key. And Gail, go ahead and ask your question, darling.
I don't know if I have a question at this particular time, but you said your mother was the prostitute, right?
Yep.
Okay, so you had, because I didn't really hear, you know, the beginning of the show, so what was your feelings on that, and how did you find out that your mom was prostitute, and how old were you when you found this out?
Well, I can answer that. It was at the beginning of the show. Is it okay for me to repeat this?
Well, you can go back because I expect this out of Gail. She always get on the radio and talking about she didn't hear what was going on. I need to just
no,
back
I didn't. I tuned in later. I apologize, you know, but I just before I can ask the question because I don't know, you know, what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah, well, go ahead. Ask me the question. Let's see if I can fix it up for you so that I can give you the big picture.
Okay. Well, do you have children?
Yes, I do.
Were any of your children affected by this, or do they know anything of this?
Well, they certainly know about it now. I had shielded them from all this information until they were in their late teens, because I didn't want their childhood to be affected, because their own father was extremely ill and was in terminally ill for 6.5 years. So they had a very difficult time in terms of their own life as youngsters. So I did the best I could to shield them from more harshness in their lives and reality, if you will.
So when they did find out, how did they take it? Is your mom still living, by the way?
No, she's not.
Oh, okay. Well, how did your children take it once
they
found out? Yeah, once they found out. And how did they find out? Did you just tell them?
It's an interesting paradox, because in our own way, not in our own way, but we had a close relationship. And even the purpose of my book was, and writing the story, that it wasn't meant to be a dark book, a Mummy Dearest. And instead of condemnation, it's a story of love and forgiveness and triumph over one's demons. And that being said, that my children were very much involved with my mother being around and the family, and I think that they loved her and whatever else went on, And so it wasn't like when they got this information that they suddenly didn't love her. And, I mean, it's always shocking and painful when you might realize that things aren't the way you think they should be or could be.
But was she still prostituting when they were when your children came along?
Oh, sure. But they wouldn't have known that. That didn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question here. When did your dad come to the realization that, you know, I can't keep my head in the sand, my wife up there giving up the booty upstairs, I'm down here looking out the front door or whatever, you know, when did he come to realization all these friends coming in and out the house? It had to be something going on because they weren't spending no time with him. They was hanging out with her.
Well, he wasn't. He would go off to work. You have to understand that. I think you're leading your listeners astray because he would go off to work. He wasn't too enthusiastic or too earnest about working, as minimal as what he did. So it was shielded from him, and he wasn't hanging around the house when these Johns were coming. In and out. Occasionally there would be a wildcat John ringing the doorbell at the wrong time of the evening, but my mother operated from a premise of when he was not around. So I think that
my
that's
apologies, because I was under the assumption that he was there with his head.
Absolutely not. He was not there.
Okay, well, how did he think that things were being made, like, you know, the meat was on the table? How did he think that all the things that was needed for you and your sister, when he know his paycheck wasn't bringing that much in, how did he think that your mom, who was supposed to not be working, in his impression, how was he thinking all these extras was coming into the house?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I couldn't tell you that. I was not in his head, and I don't know that maybe, I mean, I have to be honest, maybe he thought it was covering the cost of things. I mean, clearly we knew it wasn't. Maybe he thought it was. And, you know, he was who he was. So I can't answer for what I don't know went on in his psyche.
Well, I know one thing. I applaud you because a child being exposed to shoplifting, used as a cover, sister turned out to be a homosexual. What happened? What came about in the scheme of things when y'all became homeless?
No, we didn't become homeless. My sister became homeless. And, of
okay.
course, that's a very painful thought. In trying to actualize her journey for how she saw it, her rebellion, her journey, her the unacceptance of what society in those days were tolerant of, she became homeless for a period of time.
Why didn't she just come home?
Well, again, I can't put myself in her head. Maybe she had to do what she had to do, and don't we all have to do what we have to do? Whether it works out or doesn't, why didn't she come home? Because maybe she found it unacceptable, or her life there was being crimped and she had to find herself. So what you're suggesting here is judging somebody else, and even though it's not what we think we want to do, it's very hard to judge what somebody else should have done, could have done, and why didn't they? Because I think everybody...
Well, it's a judgment when
you say, why didn't she come home? I don't know why she didn't come home, because she probably felt she couldn't live in that kind of milieu.
Wow.
I don't know. I think the thing would be that since there was a book written about it, and even though you say it's written out of love, when other people read it, that's what they're going to think. Well, why didn't she just go home? Or, well, why did she allowed that? Well, why didn't she say that? Why didn't he do this? This is the thing that we get from stories. When people read stories, you always have questions. It's just like watching a movie. You'd be like, why did she just run? You know,
it's like, you know, what's the other element that we don't know about, you know, because we wasn't living it. We just outside looking in, you know, and I was thinking, you know, when you're going through economic situation, when you're poor, like even growing up, around my cousins and aunts and everything, you know, they would go to a certain bakery and get bread, you know, loaves of bread for less than a dollar and buy like 8 or 9 of them, and they would share, or they would constantly get together and, you know, have meals and stuff, you know, because it's hard for you, it's hard for everybody. And as a family, our family, individual family, and our aunts and cousins, we were close. So they were like immediate family opposed to being extended mm-hmm. families. And I'm just saying, you know, when you said y'all was going through stuff, you know, struggling, poor and everything, your sister, you know, I don't care if somebody in my family, you know, didn't have a place to go. I got a floor, I got a blanket, you can stay here, we're going to make it work, you know, and that's right. What I'm saying, why didn't she just come home?
Well, that was the path that she chose, and she couldn't be controlled. Because she wanted to go out and do what she needed to do. And oftentimes, if you equate it with other people in their lives, if you want to project that, let's just say homeless people or anybody, I mean, we can't always, we can't, a rational thought is, sure, why didn't you come home with a blanket and the floor, whatever. But, you know, that's what she did.
Right. So how is your sister now? Is she stable and
very stable? My sister is beyond stable. She pulled herself together over the years after she struggled with her own journey, her identity mm-hmm. of who she was, where she was, what she was going to do with herself. She picked herself up by her bootstraps and really traveled in a very successful journey. Again, I use that word all the time, but it always is a journey of succeeding to make her life meaningful for her. And she ended up, first of all, very successful in her work life and a good life and a very happy person as well. And so, you know, when she retired, I mean, she was kind of minus of an education. She left high school at 16. She eventually went on to get her high school degree, but never really got college educated in a formal fashion. She took some courses here and there, but she retired from being the chief financial officer of a college in Boston. And I would say that's a pretty lofty accomplishment.
Sure is. I know you said earlier in the show that your sister was born gay. Okay, that's your take on it.
No, that's just my belief. I'm not saying
right.
I'm right. I just
no
believe
that. They wouldn't believe, but I'm just saying it's today because you said your sister, she went through a lot of changes. Well, one of those changes that she reverted back to being heterosexual, or is she still gay today?
She tried being heterosexual for a period of time in between her period of trying to figure out her life, but then she reverted back to being gay. And in Massachusetts, as in many states, gay homosexual marriages are allowed, and she, in fact, married somebody and is within a homosexual marriage. And, again, I don't know how well-versed you are in all the states that have adopted this and how many people are in those kind of unions, but there are certainly many. I mean, I've become just as educated as maybe you and your listeners. It's a different world out there, and to repeat, it's not a radioactive, in-the-closet kind of subject. The whole world is now looking at homosexuality in such a different way.
I know, and... I truly understand the world's evolving into different acceptance, but, you know, everybody got their cultural beliefs and their lifestyle that they live. You know, I'm not going to make a decision on whether I think that it's wrong for these different states to promote same-sex marriages. Now, to me personally, I think they can say they are having unions or whatever, but I think the term marriage should be used strictly the way the Bible set it up to be, male and female. You know, I don't care who you love and what you choose to do with the person that you love, but I think that people should start trying to have the same equal title because you're not on the same level, you know. It should be, y'all can have a union, y'all can be sharing expenses, medical, whatever, you know, y'all can make your little rules, but I just had an issue when they want to call it a marriage because marriage should be the sanctity of male and female. As the
so
Bible
you think
has,
it should be male and female, which is fine, and I think that the world, as we listen to the banter that comes across, is certainly divided on that. And there are those, and I mean, you can even find clergy, be it Catholicism, Protestant, Christian, Jewish, all kinds of religious institutions. Some embrace it and some don't.
And I think my take on the whole thing,
you know, like Shalonda was getting ready to say, everybody want to do their own thing and try to justify it. You know, me personally, I go by the law of what God has laid down, you know. So,
yeah, but
the bottom
line is we all go, I'm just, and I don't necessarily want to come across that I'm defending it, but having lived through it, I have, my point of view is different, but I'd like to defend that we are all God's children and God loves everybody. And if
absolutely,
this is what is sanctioned in the world, whether people find love with each other, I mean, now we're into more of a discussion of what constitutes, you know, what the Bible deems. Well, there's a lot of, if you're at all familiar with the Bible and your listeners are, there's certainly, that Bible can be a pretty nasty book of a lot of aberrant behaviors and things that are really not so nice and not so nasty. So we can all cling to what we think, but, I mean, when I said to me about people being born that way, I've just seen too much of it out there of people being in relationships. I've seen transgender people that come out of very stable, normal, traditional, and I'll underscore that word, homes, and what makes them transgender, feel that they're in a different body than what they should be. I mean, so I don't feel at all like I only expressed earlier in the conversation, it was a heartbreak for me as a 9-year-old child and not understanding, and it took me many years to understand throughout my youth and to grow into it. But I think that we all have to look at the world in a different kind of way. And when you see clergy of institutions defending it and fighting for it, you got to say, hey,
that's
a world full of people with different opinions and feelings.
Right, but that's because man tends to change God's law into what they want people to believe so that they will be accepted and it's acceptable to them. Man makes that excuse for people, not necessarily that it came out of the Bible that way. People, not even 10 years ago, Catholics, you know, damned bisexuality and homosexuality. And now today they're embracing priests that are bisexual and homosexual. It's because man is changing the rules to fit them, not necessarily that we're going to walk by God. So
well, I don't know that any person
in
this earth has had a direct conversation with God. So I think that religion is interpreted by man as best as they can, and that clergy, whatever it is, whatever faith you do to follow it, I think you do the best you can to try to understand what the Bible has to say or what it is. So I don't think that in a certain sense, what we interpret, what we think God is saying, well, who of us is to really know? I mean,
well, the thing is, no, what I'm saying is, like, we're going to use the Catholics have a strong belief, and they are steadfast in their belief when it comes to what the Bible says is yay and nay. They can still stand up and fight today about birth control, but not even 10 years ago, they were against homosexuality, where now they're getting lackadaisy. It's not because they don't not following the belief of the Bible anymore. It's that they're becoming lax because they have no, they feel like they have no choice. They're either going to lose followers, or we're going to conform to man just a little bit to make everybody's life comfortable. In the Bible, and your walk as a Christian, as a Catholic, as a Jew, as a Hindu, as a Buddhist, should not be comfortable in the world, because we're not supposed to walk of the world.
So we shouldn't change our beliefs because society says that it's okay to marry a man, for
exactly.
a man to marry a man. That doesn't make me
Tony
any comfortable, more
question.
Comfortable in my life.
Tony, go ahead and
yes.
ask the question you have.
I don't have a question, but I kind of agree with the lady that just talking. You know, God's law is God's law.
God is what? I didn't hear what you're...
I have a tendency to agree with the lady that was talking. God's law is God's law.
Shalonda, my co-host.
Yeah, Shalonda. Yeah, hi, Shalonda.
Nice.
But she touched on some things. Me and a buddy were talking earlier, and see, a lot of people change God's law because they want God's law
to accommodate their behavior.
You know what I'm saying? Well, see, God's law is God's law, and you can't change that. And when you get to the point where you want to change God's law, then that's a problem for me because, you know, God's law is law. And my thing is I don't have anything against people that do what they do, but my thing is, like Shalonda said, you know, man and woman supposed to be considering that marriage thing. I don't think that, you know, I don't agree with that. But see, men gonna make it the way they want to do it, and they can't change God's law.
The same thing with laws of the land. You know,
yes.
man make laws to benefit them. You know,
yes.
it's a big government is a big business,
yes.
and I would dare not quote government. And say it's fine for me because government said so. Because a whole lot of things aren't fine for me because government said so. Like
yes.
banning guns is not fine for me because government said so. Because it doesn't
yes.
do
right.
anything for anybody who buy a gun on the street, which most
right.
convicts do anyway. It bans
yeah.
law,
yeah.
you know, bans
right.
it against us who need
right.
to protect ourselves. You know, right. there's a whole lot of things that government do that I don't follow. But see, I'm not a follower.
What?
I'm one of them people that stand out and do what she want to do.
That's
you know,
that's how I am.
Amen.
So
amen.
Just because
but,
they say it's fine today, 10 years from now, they might say, no, we're going to abolish this. You see, it was a time when they thought slavery was cool.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? It was a time when they thought that killing Jews was cool. You know, but we don't think that way today. You know, because it took a change somewhere along the line for somebody to say, this ain't cool. You know, and it's going to be the same thing with homosexuality. It's going to be a day
yes.
where people say, this is not cool.
It's
you
not.
Know, and
I
then everything going to start changing and everybody going to start
yeah.
believing in heterosexuality again.
Yeah.
I have to weigh in on saying that. I can't believe that's ever going to happen. I think the whole idea of society going back to heterosexuality as the only choice is long gone, and I think it's an unrealistic position to even think that. And when you talk about that, how do we account for when you want to talk about Christianity and all the things about pedophiles within the church and all that who are supposed to follow the laws of God? And what about adultery and all that, the Ten Commandments and things that mankind does not practice what God has to say? And that's because mankind is also... not perfect. And isn't that what we should be striving for as human beings, to try to do God's will?
We're supposed to be as perfect as we can strive to be. We have never going to be a perfect person, but we are supposed to strive for greatness. We're not supposed to just sit there and accept what everybody gives us. We're supposed to strive for greatness and believe and walk in faith. But when we keep, you know, laying down and opening up our chest and say, okay, I'll follow you because the law says it's all good. It's not all good just because government said it's all good. This is all big business. Every decision that the government makes is because of business. It is not because of pleasure. It is not to please us as human beings.
It is to make them money.
The reason why everybody getting married in these states now, that's a health insurance thing. That is a health insurance. You know how much money they make off of that? They don't care that a man want to marry a man. They don't care that a woman want to marry a woman. They care that they can make money off of this. End of the story. If it didn't make money, it won't fit. I can guarantee
it wouldn't exist.
I just want to jump in here and just say this. I know for a fact that I follow the laws of the Bible, the King James Version, and the Bible were inspired by God and written by holy men. Now, in the Bible, it's talking about abomination. It also states in the Bible back in the days of Abraham and Lot that when the angels came to Lot's family and the guys there were homosexuals, they said, it's in the Bible, come out so we can have our way with them. So homosexuality was way back then, but God says that's an abomination. The thing is, what my listeners and my co-hosts are saying is pretty much that since it's always thrown in our face, it's a small percentage of us are still holding on what is biblically correct walk in life, you know, and everybody's getting mainstream and accepting the status quo. But, you know, the Bible also says it's going to be a small, narrow road to heaven and a wide, beaten track going to hell. And with that being said, everybody has been exposed to someone who's gay, someone who's drunk, someone who's a prostitute, and because we get to know the person's nature and their spirit, we like them and we love them and we embrace them, but just because we love them does not mean what they do is correct. So everybody got to follow their own path. And with that being said, you know, what is your message that you're trying to give to people that you can overcome this lifestyle? And if you're saying that, then you got to understand that if you overcame something, then you didn't accept what you was into to start with.
Oh, unmuted. You must be doing a break. Oh, my God. They're going crazy there. Governmental. Well, a caller who sounds like it's the same caller and two hosts that are in different locations. It's supposed to be in the same one. And how
on the air,
homosexuality
darling.
Is wrong.
We're still on the air, darling,
and
I just asked you a question.
Oh, my God, they're going crazy in government, how they don't care about anybody and how they make money because they'll accept homosexuality and all that. And
Miss Dale,
you're on the air, darling.
Hello?
I don't agree.
You're still on the air, sweetheart.
Well, I know, but you know what? It said muted, and I didn't hear any sound. And I'm just disgusted with my husband.
You was with that we're going crazy, and they're talking about the government, you know, blah, 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 you know. And basically what I was saying to you is...
I mean, I don't think we're all in a position to argue. I think for the government, I mean, there's so many issues, good, bad. Look at the inequality for people. There's so many issues going on.
I agree. No one's arguing. We were just basically saying with passion that, you know, just because we have accepted the status quo does not mean that it is correct. And that's the premise of what we were saying. And what I was saying to you, your book is saying how you overcame those things like prostitution, homosexuality, shoplifting, homelessness, stolen cars. If you overcame something, that means that it was something that was not pleasant to start with. So we just call it a spade. You know, no one is arguing. No one is – people sometimes are just passionate about their point of view, and we all are entitled to it, you as well, you know, and you are entitled to say what you want to say, but – my listeners and my co-hosts and myself, we were just giving our point of view because we don't agree that, you know, it's okay because everybody is gay, that it's okay, you're born gay. We just have a different opinion on the same subject.
That's right, and I'm not arguing that either. I agree. I mean, hey, you're entitled to your opinion, and it's absolutely fine with me. It's not what I believe, and that's okay. And
But God's law is God's law, you know. Men cannot change God's law, men have tried to do that. You can't change God's law.
Right. So let's move past it.
I don't care what you do.
Because we got so far off subject, and we got like 35 minutes left. So let's get back to the reason why we on the show tonight.
I just want to add that I don't think that we're going to solve that issue amongst ourselves, because the world is full of people with opinions and lives and religious and secular and all kinds of things.
Absolutely.
Right. But you know something, Dale? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, you're going to tell us how to get your books, and we're going to ask you some more questions because we got maybe about a good 35 minutes left on the clock, and we're winding down, and this is getting heated up. And I see the Dale is floor agitated with us. She's saying something. They getting all wound up. And we, everybody on the air and all over the globe is hearing Dale talk. And she thought that she was on me, but, baby, we heard it all. So we're going to take a little break.
Oh, that's okay. I don't think I said anything so lethal. I said that you're all aggravated or arguing over government. And, you know, I don't think we're going to settle. I think it's got a long way to go, so I don't feel that I said anything that is not very poignant to what this conversation has been.
Don't sweat it. We're going to take a little small break.
I'm not going to sweat it. Don't you sweat it either, because you thought I was not on mute.
Okay.
And one other thing. Are you there?
I'm going to a music break, darling. I'll be
right
back.
Okay, you go.
Something wonderful to me, to watch it grow inside yourself, to feel your heart beside itself. Sometimes it hurts to love so bad, when you know you've given all you can. Sometimes it hurts to even ask. You do your best, but still it's much too sad. Sometimes the pain is just too much, oh, and it hurts like hell. That's the way it feels. True love, it has no hiding place. It's not something you just put away. Yeah.
back in the time with Aretha Franklin, It Hurts Like Hell. And that's how it was for the life that Dale Stanton had to grow up in. Her mom had to sell her booty to put food on the table. Dad wasn't making enough money to make ends meet. Sister couldn't handle it. She turned gay, and she started stomping with the big dogs. And then as she was growing up, you know, Dale, she had to be a front while mother was boosting clothes or whatever to keep clothes on their back. And her sister went through a time of homelessness and, you know, stolen cars. Life was a mess, but, you know, terminal illness. But just choirs is kept in a lot of communities, you know. That's not unique. It's just a horrible, horrific story that she had to go through. But she's a survivor. She's still here, you know. And her goal of her book is to let people know that you can overcome whatever you're going through. And that's a good message because, you know, people think that, oh, everything is peachy keen. You grow up into a good environment. You don't have no issues. But if you talk to people, everybody got a story to tell. Choirs is kept. So, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, she's here and she's honest and she's talking about, you know, her life, and we're going to get her back on the phone. And anybody who got a question for my guest, you know, dial 347-945-6003 because that will let me know that you got your hand up and you got a question. And I know we have this guest out of Baltimore named Tony that's been hanging in here and having a conversation with us. And during the break, Dale said, did we tell him? Do we know him? Is he a point man? Somebody come on and start some confusion? Hell to the no, because I ain't never seen this brother. But his opinion is valid. You know, anybody got something to say? We dealing with an adult show. Bring it, because we got answers for any questions you got to say. And I see Tony still waving over there. You got something you want to say, brother? Because Dale is still here on the line. Go ahead and spit it out, baby. You got your hand up.
Hello, Tony. Where's Dale at?
Oh, yeah, I'm here, Tony. I want to hear what you got to say.
No, only thing I'm saying, I'm not a lot of people think I'm a troublemaker, but I'm not. But I'm just a brother, man. I just meet the truth, you know what I mean? I just know and my head goes off, you know, you've been through what you went through, and you know, God has brought you through, and you know, you got a better life now. You got a husband that you say that you know you can relate to, and y'all on you know the same thing. But my thing is, God's law don't change. No one can change God's law, and that's
true,
what I'm saying. I'm gonna stand, and I was talking to a buddy the other day. You know, we cannot change God's law. God's law is sufficient. We can't change that. You know, and that's all I have to say. Now, I don't want to start no trouble, but that's what I'm saying. God's law is God's law. And if I'm starting trouble by saying that, then, hey, I'm a troublemaker.
we're just going to spank you.
Okay.
Tony, thanks. I enjoyed the discussion.
I had to, my head goes off to you. God knows. I'm glad that you know your life is good and you're doing good, and I like that.
And you know what, Tony? My feeling is we're all God's children, and we're sparks of God, and that we do the best we can while we're here, and try to fulfill our mission in life.
Right.
We all
right.
have souls within our bodies that just. Mm-hmm. Try to function on a level that make us worthy people of what God's commandments are.
Yes, yes, and we have to do that. But in that respects, we have to know that God's law is God's law. You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely.
I mean, nothing makes no wrong. There's no wrong that you can make right, and there's no right you can make wrong.
Amen.
That's
the word, Tony.
I'm an old school brother. I just live by that. Old school.
Mm-hmm. Well, good
yeah.
for you. And, you know, you're being one of God's children. Good for you.
Yeah.
Doing good in the world and trying to carry out his laws. I try to
his
do
law.
The same thing. As long as we're having this discussion, I try to live a good life and respect others, and hopefully they respect me and do good deeds.
I don't disrespect what you're doing. You know, I mean, you've been through something. You know, a lot of people ain't been through that, but, you know, I'm just saying, you know, I just have a problem with that, you know, with the changing of God's law. That's my whole thing. You know?
Yeah,
other than that,
yeah.
everything you went through, and that, man, I have amends to you, you know.
You're a survivor. Yeah, well, I'm grateful to be a survivor, and I feel blessed. That's the funny part. I feel blessed by God and grateful for all the small mercies that I have. I learned to love those that are around me and appreciate relationships, and I think that's the blessing, that when you go through a great deal, you can really appreciate the simple things in life, and it's not about greed.
Let me ask you a question real quick. Jay, I want to jump in here. You know, we all tiptoeing through the roses and everything. You know, and you said that back in the day when your mom was getting paid and you was back there as a child peeking through the doors and being nosy and saying, "Mom, what you doing trying to interfere and be what they call it back in the day, cock blocked," and you was trying to stop what was going on.
Wait a minute, what is it called, honey? What are you saying, cock blocking?
Cock blocking. You know, when the kids would be interfering and making noise and just trying to make it so you're not engaged in your sexual act with comfort.
Spell
it, T-O-T?
What is
it, T-O-T? So we call it cock blocking.
C-O-C-K.
C-O-C-K?
Mm-hmm.
Cock clocking?
Cock blocking. C-O-C-K.
C-O-C-K.
Yeah, make sure it's not going in
or
you're not enjoying it.
trying to block somebody from having relations.
What kind of term is that, honey? I didn't hear what you said.
Okay. I said it's a street term when somebody's trying to block somebody else from having relations with the sexual relations. It's called cock blocking.
Because the cock ain't going in. You know, that's why I say it blocks. Because you say, "Get away from the door. Why are you looking through the door? You see I'm busy. I got somebody up in here."
So it's
so
called cock blocking.
Being done.
Yeah.
Lord, did you get to the point where you learned some things? Because, you know, with life, you learn how to adjust, you know, and being exposed to that, even though that might not have been your road that you took, did you learn anything? Did you get any special skills? Did you learn how, you know, do the fellatio, or did you learn some tricks by being nosy, peeking through the door?
Did I learn tricks peeking through the door? Well, let's say I learned a lot in life. I don't know if necessarily peeking through the door. I learned that life can be hard and that people can be cruel and not to trust so easily of people. And they can be, as I say, very unkind. They can be street angels and home devils. And
I know what I learned when I was young, and I was trying to peek through the door. My mom was in there. I learned I got my ass whipped because I was being nosy. You know, she said, "Oh, you want to look? Okay, I got something for you." So I didn't look no more.
Oh, okay. Well, good for you. Sure, I got my ass whipped many times, in not just looking through the door, but just, kind of trying to figure out life.
I know that's right. Dale, tell everybody the message you're trying to send about your book, and also tell them how they can get your book, you know, and let them know how to reach you, because I have other people on there who would love to have you on their show to share your story. So give them information how they can do that.
Well, first of all, as we're speaking, let me thank you for a lot of fun and a wonderful interview and great questions, and particularly the caller, all of them, but Tony, you're on my the top of the list. Great, great feedback. Anyway, I love that we're laughing. First of all, for all your listeners, my website is www.thehookersdaughter.com. And if anybody chooses to purchase the book, they can order it through my website. I'll be happy to sign it. It's also available with Infinity Publishing. Amazon has it, and for those that are tablet readers, like Nook, Kindle, iReaders, it's available that way as well. I also go out to do presentations for organizations and book clubs and various places that I've been invited to speak about the book. And I also have been into a new thing of Skyping across the country. I just did a book club Skyping with some folks in Kansas City a couple of weeks ago, another time out of Florida, shortly to be done in Oregon. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity that people want to hear about what I have to say about overcoming life's problems, if you will. And I want to say to all your listeners, first of all, God bless you all, but we all have flaws and wounds and deficiencies that are hard to admit. And I admit them in this book and what life is like, but our imperfections are part of us. And to deny them is to hide from ourselves and from each other. And life is not about flawlessness, but about overcoming. And that's my message out there. And I'd like to leave everybody with the thought, I don't know how much longer we have to speak, but I'd like to talk about a parable of a king who had the perfect diamond, and he dropped it, and a crack developed the length of the stone. And the king summoned all the jewelers of the land, and they all came to the same conclusion. The diamond was useless, irredeemably flawed. Then out of nowhere, an elderly gentleman came and wanted to examine the diamond. Give me a week, he says, and I'll have it fixed. But he really knew that crack could not be erased. So he carved petals on top of the diamond, and now the crack formed the stem of a blossom. Well, the crack did not disappear, but it was transformed. And we, too, will never be perfect, but we can turn flaws into flowers. And that's what we have to hope for, all of us God-fearing people, that we work on our flaws and turn them into flowers and do good in this world.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And I wholeheartedly agree with that because I believe that it's about relationships. You know, it's not, like you said, it's not where you started, it's where you end, but the core of how you treat people, you know, if you got a spirit of love about you, because that's one thing that's undeniable, that God loved us so much that he came because we had brokenness and issues and everything, you know. And I tell people out there that's listening, if you're going through whatever you're going through, it may seem difficult and something that you can't overcome, but you can always take it to the Lord in prayer because he can fix things that you think he can't fix. You know, he can love on you, you know, and impart that mercy and grace upon your life and orchestrate your steps. So don't give up, don't give in, you know, just take it to the king, you know.
That's right, and be strong. And I wanted to say when I mentioned my website, www.thehookersdaughter.com, there's also an email on there. And if anybody chooses to write me after they read the book or whatever, I would be delighted to hear from them and interact. And you wanted to know the message when I go out of my presentations to organizations that I try to convey about the flaw. We all have flaws, but life circumstances can break us, and people do react differently to the hurt. Some are devastated while others grow because of it. I like to think I grew. A tree that doesn't fall over in a storm was strong before the storm, revealing its strength. And maybe another tree might stand up in normal weather but breaks when a storm strikes. So there
you go.
We're all depending what our roots are. And from my perspective, the miracle of the human spirit is that paradoxically, and here's the kicker, the more broken you are, the more whole you have the chance to become.
Absolutely. God can fix it. Anybody out there, you know, who went through what she went through, My Dale, she grew up in an environment where the money was kind of short. You know, Mom had to become a hooker to get the necessities that she needed, from shoplifting and sister becoming homeless, homosexuality, dealing with stolen cars and everything. It's just that, you know, it's just the time that she grew up in, you know, and that time in the 50s is still some situations for people today, you know. If you're going through something, do not let that define who you are. because
you're so right. I have to say what you're saying now to your listeners is so true. And being that we discussed the Bible a bit in length before, and we all know it says if you save one person, you save the world. So I think
Amen.
Your show, the goal is that, as I am being your guest, we want to think that we're doing, spreading the good word.
Mm-hmm. We want people to know that, you know, just because you're going through something, that does not mean that's where you're going to be stuck. Because if you keep believing, keep praying, keep pressing forward and taking your problems to the Lord, you know, he can set you straight on the path you need to be. But it takes some work, you know. If you don't do no work, like faith without work is dead, you got to do your part too. You know, we all going through something, but you got to get up and you got to be passionate to change what you don't like about your life, you know, and build good relationships, you know, because you keep messing around, you wind up in jail. And then there you go, you're lost into the system. But we want to thank our guest, Dale Stanton, for spending the time with us tonight, this Friday, to share her life. Get her book. Go to her website, www.thehookersdaughter.com. She will also autograph your books. You can get it on the tablets. You know, go to Amazon, you know. Look and try to find her work because it's so transparent. It will give you some relief to let you know that you can rise above what you've been through, you know. So let this woman speak into your life, you know, show you that, you know, it will be a brighter day if you just hold on, you know, to hold on to God's unchanging hand, and he will see you through. And she's doing good. You know, everybody is doing good. Her sister's got a good high-paying job. She got a man that's loving her. She got kids that's doing well. And, you know, she's still, you know, going through the things that life will throw at you. But at least this time, when life throws something at you, you know how to bend instead of breaking, you know. And we just want to thank her. We want to thank all our listeners for calling in. You know, we had a great time tonight here. And we're going to get her back again to share more of her story. And we want to thank Tony from Baltimore, Maryland, who had his point of view that really, you know, made my guest laugh. It was so exciting. But we know we got a little bit of time left, and anybody who want to give a shout-out before we go off the air, dial in 347-945-6003. Hit the number one key, because if I play the song, I'm going to come back and let y'all give y'all little shout-outs before we get off the air. So stand by for this little break, and we'll be right back.
Though the pressures of life seem to weigh you down, and you don't know which way to turn, God is concerned, and he's working it out for you. The child that's on cocaine, through prayer he can change. That marriage that's on the verge of breaking up, although sometimes you have to walk alone, now you ask yourself, is there a word from the Lord, or from the Lord? You need a blessing, and you need it right away.
song to close the show out with is by Shirley Caesar. He's Working It Out For You. And I say that, you know, because before we get off of here, you know, everybody is going through something, has been through something, but God is still on the throne. Just take it to him in prayer and believe. You know, I just want to thank all our listeners. I want to thank my friend, Sister Holt, that goes to my church. I want to thank my pastor, Samuel Alexander, for tuning in, and James Halls out of Baltimore, Brevette Lynch, my friend Tony from Maryland, from hanging out, and Gail, she's hanging out from Capitol Heights, Maryland, up near the D.C. area, and Dale for spending that time to share what's going on. So we're going to give our guests her opportunity to give her shout-outs and her props before we leave here, and then we go to our listener Tony, and anybody else who got something to say, hit the number 1 on your keypad if you dial 347-945-6003 and make your little statement and go down in a time capsule with us, because whatever we say right now is going to be part of the archives. So with that being said, Dale, sweetheart, is there anything you want to say before we get off the air?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. I just loved being able to be a guest on your show and the interaction and the things you asked me, and I want to wish all you and your listeners good health and happiness and love in their lives. And as Carl Jung said, and they should think of that, I am not what has happened to me. I am what I choose to become. And I
Amen.
Think
that's what I'm talking about. Exactly.
Yeah, and I think what you're presenting to your listeners and guests, the transparency of our lives, hopefully will help somebody. And like I said to you earlier in our talk, like the Bible says, if you save one person, you save the world. And I think that we should be grateful for all God's mercies and good health.
You're absolutely correct, Dale, because the Bible also say that Jesus said if he got 99 and one was lost, he's going to get that one and bring him back into the fold. And that's what we got to do. We got to make a change one heart, one mind at a time. Just reach out there and help somebody, because we're not no better than nobody else, because if you haven't been through nothing, live long enough, you will.
That's
and
right.
And now we have
that's
our
right.
guest listener, Tony. You got a shout-out, darling, before we get off the air?
Yeah, I just want to just give a shout-out to everybody that went through something, but just know that God has had the final say, and his law is his law. And Dale, you know, good luck, and keep prospering in what you do.
Thank
Amen.
You, Tony.
Amen.
Thank you for calling in and asking and stating your wonderful thoughts and opinions, and I definitely enjoyed the interaction between our discussion.
Okay, I
it was wonderful. I did too. Very energized. And my beautiful co-host, Shalonda, is there anything you want to say, sweetheart?
Yes, I just want to thank Miss Dale for giving us a door and window into her life and what she's been through. And I wish her all good luck in the world with future endeavors. And hopefully maybe she can come this way someday and maybe we can meet at one of these book signings or something. So you have a whole lot of events on the books. So hopefully
well,
one
you'll
day
land
we'll be
to go to my
past.
Website, and I think there's a
yes.
picture of me there. But more important,
Absolutely.
Thank
a
you for
picture.
Your input and for
You're
helping
welcome.
Me participate with you and all that good stuff that goes. And I think for all of us that have been in the arena fighting and getting their asses kicked, it's good to get their feedback.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. Yes, yes, yes. And coming up this month, we have a guy who was telling us we almost got caught up into a nuclear bomb right here in the United States. We also got a transgender coming up this month. We also got a guy who said he can make money with the mind. I definitely want to talk to him. So we got a fantastic lineup coming down the pike. So you stay with us every week at 7:30 on Unmasked with authors Terry Elow and Shalonda. And just don't forget that, you know, my personal website is www.terrylle.com. And I also got a new perfume line out there. I've got Unmasked, Confessions, Exposed, and something else, but my perfume smells good. Call us 563-956-8753, and I can make you smell good too, you know. And Shalonda, take us out of here, darling.
Okay, we thank you for joining us on Unmasked with Authoress Terry E. Lau and Shalonda. Hopefully we'll see you again next week at 7:30 p.m. sharp. Everybody, God bless and good night.
And thank
good
you,
night.
Everybody.
Good night.
All your friends are telling you you should have a fancy car, diamond ring, but girl, you know all good things come in time. Girl, you know I do just about anything. See a smile on your face. Don't let your friends go messing with your mind. When he said